you definitely want a partner that brings something to the table that's not redundant to your own skill set. Like bring something
complementary skill.
Definitely something complementary. I mean, I think that's first and foremost. Certainly somebody that you think will be in it for the long haul. It's always hard to tell, but of course, when you're dating someone, you hope that's the case. So
yeah, would you marry that person?
Yeah, exactly.
If not, do not start a business with them.
Yeah, it's certainly like a marriage, no matter, I guess, whatever the dynamic is, because you're really getting involved and hopefully for a long time. And you want to be aligned but different enough that you're complementing each other. Yeah.
You know, they say women shouldn't be bossy.
We're out here reclaiming that word. What's so wrong with being the boss?
Welcome back to Bossy. Today we are talking about doing business with someone that you are romantically involved with
your partner,
which is so fun. And who better to talk about doing business with your partner than Trey and Ashley Lockerbie, the married founders of Better Booch. Yes, they are multi-hyphenate entrepreneurs. Trey is a Grammy award-winning songwriter, a number one podcast co-host, and CNBC contributor. So I actually know Trey from like the money world, the personal finance world. That's how we met. And Ashley is a former backup singer for Rihanna and Selena Gomez, which is just wild.
You guys are cool.
Yeah, way cooler than us. And was named the female founder to watch by the Female Quotient. So they're advocates for gut health as a cornerstone of mental health, which is a totally wild, like, brain-gut connection thing that I've actually been learning about more, too. And they have a documentary coming out soon called Gut Check. So their business, Better Booch, it's won several awards. It's considered like one of the coolest companies to work for by Business Insider. And so they're joining us today on the fun, funky, metaphoric couch to talk about what it's like to run a business together.
The virtual couch. Hi,
the
guys.
The virtual couch.
Hi, and we're so sad that we're not there with you in person, but I'm so glad we got to join you at least over the internet.
Yeah. Sam. So I want to start with the conversation about Rihanna and Selena Gomez, though, like just quickly, because we talk a lot about confidence on our show. And I think when we think about those two ladies, they've got just like really cool confidence styles. And so I am curious, Ashley, like what you have like picked up with, even if it's just like energy vibes of how someone presents themselves from like being around celebrities like that and working with Rihanna and Selena Gomez.
Oh my gosh. So much, first of all. And I mean, what a great experience that was to be able to kind of see firsthand how those types of people operate and sort of how that whole machine around those people operates as well. I always say, like, I never, you know how sometimes in the press it comes out like, oh, J-Lo showed up with a 30-person entourage and this, that, and the other. And I'm like, no, that's literally how many people it takes to be that productive. So I never fault those people for that. But yeah, I remember watching we were at a pre-Grammy party, and we like went over together. We got ready and went over together, and she's like, okay, I'm going to be, and we were about to walk, and she's like, okay, I'm going to be a minute. And then she walked in, she stood up really tall, like amazing, impeccable posture, and just worked the room. And I was like, oh, wow. And she was so young at that time. She was 21, I think.
Wait, what do you mean worked the room?
Sorry?
What do you mean worked the room?
She just kind of like embodied, she like took on this extra level of like, she just imbued, she had a confidence imbued in her posture, and she was like looking people in the eye, and she didn't seem scared to talk to a single person in that room. And even though it was filled with celebrities and label execs, and, you know, she kind of had this vibe of like, even that young, of like, I know you guys want to talk to me. I know I'm the person you want to talk to. So, you know, so that was really cool. And then I was thinking about this the other day, and it's something that I've taken with me and tried to apply to our business even. And that is, I remember this moment. We were sitting backstage before a show, before a live performance, and she was playing some new music that she was working on for me. And we were talking about like, she was playing the new music, and then she was talking about the whole vibe around it, like her look that was going to be, she was going to change up her look. She was going to.
And who was this who was telling you this, by the way?
This was Rihanna.
Rihanna was telling you this. Okay.
Yeah. So it was like during the Rated R era, I would say. So it was like, we were promoting like rude boy and so hard and sort of like these songs that were really like her look was very dark and like kind of rocker-esque.
Yes.
And she was like, I'm going to change it completely for the next album. The next album was Loud. And the cover of that album, if you remember, was her in like a soft pink, almost like a tutu type of thing. And she was like, I need a 180 because all these other artists are now trying to do the like hard rocker thing.
Yeah.
They're trying to go like gothy, you know, dark, sharp edges in their styling and everything. And so, I need to do what everybody's not doing.
Zig when they zag. I love a zig when everybody else zags. So that's great.
Yes. And you've taken that with you. And like, that's kind of been a cornerstone like moment that you'll reference now in business, Ashley.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if you're trying to do something that everyone or like even one other person has already done, you're already too late, you know, because the cycle of time that it takes to develop an idea and to get it out into the world, if you're working on it now, when someone else already has it out there, you're going to be 6 months behind.
Yeah.
So, you know, so that's like something that I was like, oh, that's really interesting. And so cool that she had the foresight to think that way as such a young person.
Yeah.
You know, because it could be so easy to just really want to fit in at that age.
I think that's been a theme for us too. And Katie, because of our background, I'll share it. You know, that Ray Dalio quote where he says, you have to be contrarian. It's important to be contrarian, but you have to be contrarian and be right. Yeah. Not a lot of people think about the second half of that comment, but I think Rihanna, to her credit, was contrarian a lot and also right. She was also like a trendsetter, knew where the puck was going.
The thing about being,
and that's kind of like Ash.
The thing about being contrarian and right is like, you don't know if you're right until after you try being contrarian. So you just have to get reps of being contrarian to like see if you're
interesting.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So you guys work together. And one of the things that we're talking about are like the pros and cons of working together as partners and that experience. So I would love to hear like one pro, we'll start with that, from you guys about like working together, working with your partner in business.
Well, I mean, to be honest, the pro and con I would share are kind of hand in hand, where I always say we share the ups and the downs. So that's something that I think is uncommon when you are not working with your spouse, because there's usually, they're not as involved, you know, in whatever you're dealing with.
Yeah.
So they can be a support system. And so I would say like when we're high, like we're both really high together. And when we're low, it's harder to be the support system for each other because we're both sharing the same stresses, you know? So to a degree, that would be kind of the number one thing that comes to mind for me. But I mean, the pros are obviously we get to, you know, we're married because we are great partners, you know, and that's in just in all aspects of life. And so to be able to share the creative process of this business together, which is, we kind of do that outside of business too, with writing music and other things. So to us, it's pretty natural to just continue to bring that creative process together to anything we're doing.
What does it look like? Go ahead. I'll have a question for you.
Well, I was just going to say my thing would be also creative collaboration. I mean, we creatively collaborated on songwriting before we were ever in business together. Yeah. And so it did feel very natural to just be like, oh yeah, let's work on this together too.
Yeah. Okay, so when you guys are both in the lows, like things not going well because you work on the same projects and same things, it's collectively not going well. Like, do you guys each handle things not going well the same way, or do you have different not going well styles?
We have looking different at your styles. Face. Yeah, we
very different styles. Yes.
Yeah. Wait, say more about that.
Okay, so I mean, I definitely tend to like, I would say I'm like an outward panic spiral type of person, and Trey is very much an inward panic spiral type of person.
Resonates.
So sometimes if I'm stressed out about something, I'm like, why aren't you more stressed out about this? Are you paying attention? You know what I mean? And he's like, whoa, this is too much right now. You know, I need to just go inward and figure it out. And, you know, so over the years of working together, which it's been 12 years in business now. Wow. So, we've definitely figured out how to each temper our own responses, like own our own side of the street, so that we're not, you know, trying to, look to the other person for comfort in those moments, because really, like, when your tank is empty, you just can't, you don't really have much to give to somebody else.
Yeah.
So it's like about trying to keep that, that personal tank.
Yeah.
Full.
We've instilled a lot of self-care practices.
Yes. It's funny because you, Tara, you also, you work with your partner, but in a different way. You're not working on the same business, but you're both CEOs.
Yeah. I think we have a really good combination, Mert and I, because we work mainly from home. So we work together in the same space, but we're working on separate companies, although we help each other a lot. And so I would say like 2 to 3 times a day, we have these like scenarios where we like excitedly update each other on what's going on in our respective businesses. And we live in this like loft penthouse. So like it, there's not a lot of like closed off space. So he works in the dining table and I work sort of in the office space that's kind of overlooking the living room area. And so like I'll be on a call and like get off the call and like, baby, that sounded like a closed sales meeting to me. And we're like, yeah, and like we're like kind of rile up together. And then we do like these like quick 15-minute like coffee chats about like we'll go up on the roof and just like update each other. But it happens like a lot of times a day, like probably like more times.
Like y'all are caffeinated.
That's my buddy. Okay, so I just stopped drinking coffee entirely. This dude can go in on the espresso. So he's caffeinated.
Oh my
but
God.
I think we're just like generally excited about like making, creating, doing, selling, like all those things are fun for us. And he started a new business about like 8 months ago. And I got to really be instrumental in like being the muse for the business and structuring a lot of what it should look like. And he was like, can I make software for you? Like, I don't want to like, I won't get you the flowers.
So
I want to like
romantic.
Make you software. And I'm like, yeah, make me software.
Speaking your love language.
I liked it. I was like, yeah, make me some stuff. Make me AI, babe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the pro is like, it's fun. Like we have a good time together. And I think you guys are both like creative people. Like creating solo is not, at least for me, is not as fun as like creating with someone and like creating with someone that you love being around, like that's just like cherry on top.
I think my issue and where I think I would struggle is that, like, never say never, right? But I think that my life works because it's compartmentalized in some ways. And so I tend to already over-index on thinking about this stuff too much. And so I worry that if I were to, like, introduce that to a relationship, whether romantic or otherwise, that it would almost overtake and like redefine the relationship in that sense, because it's just my nature to be like fully in it, if that makes sense. Does that ever feel present or like a concern for y'all?
Absolutely. And so we've had to be very mindful of setting those boundaries. So one thing we set up was a no work talk after 7 p.m. We kind of have over the years establish that anything that happens after 7, which is usually about the time we put our two boys down to sleep, you know, if we get into work talk at that point, you know, we're not going to be going to bed anytime soon. It's like we get riled up again, like thinking about all the things that could be possibilities, good or bad. And so that's just one rule of thumb we put in place that's been very effective for us.
I like it. A strict cutoff. Yeah.
Yeah. A super strict cutoff. And really being disciplined about that is like important. And then also super defined roles so that we're not really like working together on the same thing all day long. That's big. And then we still actually have like other things to talk about when we're, you know, when we're coming together to update each other. We can be like, okay, well, I'm winning over here and you're doing this over here. It's like, yeah. So that way we're not both trying to whack the same moles at the same time.
What are the separate roles that you guys have?
So over the years, we've kind of established that Ash is handling what I say the fun stuff. She does the branding, the marketing, the creative kind of content we put out. She's also she's also head of our R&D team. I'm just like more naturally slanted, as you're probably not surprised by, Katie, like the financial side of things and the operation side of things, like more the numbers. So so that's kind of how we've found that it works for us.
I want to bridge that gap too, because I think if I'm a listener hearing this and I don't know the Lockerbies and I'm like, wait, Grammys and songs and Rihanna and like
Better what do they do? Booch. What's the business? Yeah.
Better Booch is a kombucha brand. And Trey sent me some after we first met on his podcast, or after, I don't remember how that happened. But you sent me like a variety pack, and then I ended up like placing a recurring order because I was like, wait, this stuff is so good. So I want to talk a little bit about, like, let's bridge that gap for the audience with the origin story about how this even came to be.
Yeah. So, you know, Ashley and I met at a birthday party in LA. We had both been touring nonstop for probably 4 or 5 years at that point. We were both a little bit, you know, burnt out of the road, I would say. When we met, we were kind of commiserating, you know, upon first meeting and sharing war stories from the road. And we started dating and falling in love. And, you know, when that tends to happen, you don't want to be gone all the time. You want to be in town. So we were kind of already, I think, open-minded to, okay, how could we make this work? You know? And, my sister Brittany called me one day. She told me that she had been diagnosed with breast cancer. It was totally out of the blue. She was 24. There was no gene, no history, just totally out of the blue. And so that really rocked us. And I think kind of put a lot in perspective for us, you know, made it even more of a priority to want to be closer to home, closer to family, maybe off the road a little bit more. And then, over time, it wasn't right away, but over time, you know, my sister, she was adamant we drink kombucha. She said it was the only thing making her feel better through her treatments, which now makes a lot of sense given the research that's been coming out lately. But back then, you know, it was sort of anecdotal, and we started trying it ourselves. There was only one brand at that time. This is like, you know, 12 years ago now. And so we just didn't like the way that product was made, and came to find out, like, pretty quickly that, you know, kombucha is actually a lot like wine or a beer. It can be made lots of different ways. It's not all the same. And you can, you know, we felt like the kind we started making at home, just because we were, I guess, curious enough about the health benefits side of it to try, that it was a lot better, and it was lower in sugar, and it was smoother, and it was all these things. And we just thought, you know, this is a way better option. Maybe this could be a cool, even just local alternative. You know, we were strolling around a farmer's market one Saturday and thought, well, wouldn't this be kind of lovely, you know, to be set up here at a farmer's market, like selling our tea? Like, this just sounds like a lovely kind of thing to do on the weekends. And maybe we could, you know, be more discerning about when we have to go on the road, if we had a little, like a side hustle, you know, to bring us some income. And that's how it started. We started at farmer's markets, and it would just sell out week after week after week. And we had to come to those forks in the road, I would say, where we had to be like, okay, are we actually really doing this or not? You know? And so it kind of just slowly, you know, brought us into the business full time, and we kind of ran with it.
So what's the sit down conversation that you guys have about, like, going into this either at the beginning and trying it, or going into it full time? Because most people, maybe they have that conversation with a co-founder that is not their partner, or they have that conversation solo with themselves, but not necessarily like with their partner. And so, like, walk us through that conversation and, like, the decisions around saying, yes, we're going to pursue this business idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a conversation that we have continued to have. It was definitely not just a one-time thing, but the first time I remember having that conversation was we had been making, so anytime you're selling any type of consumable product, you have to make it in a commercially licensed kitchen. And so we had been renting this commercial kitchen by the hour, and the cheapest hours were in the middle of the night. So we were renting the middle of the night hours and brewing and bottling this kombucha from like 11 p.m. to 5 a.m.
Do what you got to do.
We're already nocturnal musicians. It wasn't
like, we're up already.
Trey to the stage for the kitchen, I guess. So we were like, okay, we're basically paying, and we were in there only one day a week at first, and then we were in there 2 and 3 days a week, and it got to the point where we were paying more by the hour for this commercial kitchen than we would be paying in rent if we were to just have our own building.
Oh, wow.
And so that was the first time that we were like, okay, do we want to commit to this? Because we had to sign a 2-year lease. We were like, for 2 years. Oh my God, what could happen in 2 years? We don't know.
Forever, yeah.
It felt like the longest time. And so, that first time was committing to that building and leasing that building for 2 years. And that came with it. We had to build it out. And so that came with it a monetary commitment as well. We used our savings from tour and put it into that building. So that was like the first time that we were really like, let's go.
Did you both agree?
I think so. Yeah.
It was an easy convo.
I think, you know, we looked at each other, we had the heart to heart, you know, or the come to Jesus kind of moment where we're like, okay, are we both in this? Do we both want to do this? And it was a hell yes or no, I guess is how we've always kind of approached it also. So every time we come to that decision, that's our guide.
What happens if you disagree? Because like in a traditional company and in business, you have like a CEO who, like, even if there's co-founder, like that the CEO kind of leans on making the final decision. Mm. And I'm curious if you guys have a structure like that, or it's just always we have to agree to be aligned. Because like if that doesn't go right, like stuff gets messy in the rest of the relationship. So I'm curious how you guys manage deciding on things.
Mm-hmm. I think just with the partnership we have, it's more of the meritocracy where it's like the best idea wins. And Ashley tends to have the best ideas. So I think that's, you know, I might act like CEO, but that's kind of, you know, that's where the real guidance comes from. But yeah, I think that's,
it's also like, okay, if this is your area of expertise, then you make the decision. Like when it comes to things that are finance related or like the best use of capital, like that kind of thing, I would say I have plenty of opinions about that kind of stuff, but I definitely defer to Trey to make the final choice when it comes after we've talked through all the possible scenarios, you know. And then similarly, you know, when it comes to branding or like messaging strategy or anything like that, we talk about it, and then he usually defers to me to make the final decision.
I see. Well, I want to ask a question because you've recently acquired a competitor, and I'm pretty sure I saw Better Booch in Whole Foods. Yes?
Yep.
So I'm like, there's quite a bit of time that's passing between like, oh, we're in the farmer's market and making it in the middle of the night to like, we're in Whole Foods and we're buying our competitors. So can you fill in that gap a little bit? It doesn't have to be a deep dive into the history, but like, talk us through the trajectory, because I want the audience to get a sense for how you went from there to here. And then we'll get into the acquisition a little bit more.
Yeah. So we bootstrapped for about 6 years. And I would say for about 3 of those years, we were doing it part time. And so after like 3 years, it just was taking up more and more of our time. And we were like, okay, we're committing to this full time. Let's go.
Okay.
And since then we built out 2 separate commercial kitchens, and of our own, and, grown into them, bursting out of them actually at this point. And really, we like to say we're like a 12-year-old business that was founded in 2019, because 2019 is when we raised our first round of capital. We rebranded to the branding that we have currently. We went fully into cans, which no one was doing at the time, in kombucha. And that was when we also got into Whole Foods. So it was kind of like this relaunch or refounding moment of the business.
5 years ago.
And that's when we really started to see that like exponential growth. And then, and so since then we've been able to hire, you know, with that capital, we were able to hire a really great sales team with relationships and, bring on a team of brokers that could get us into all of the big meetings and make partnerships with various distributors in different markets and sort of like really grow the business more strategically rather than like Trey delivering hundreds of cases a day out of our minivan.
Which was a thing. And I would say that like the real pivot in the last year has been honestly fueled by all of this amazing new research that's coming out. Stanford last year put out this really groundbreaking study. It was in the New York Times and a bunch of other publications where it showed that fermented foods actually decrease inflammation and do all these other things for your health that are incredible. And it's just kind of scratching the surface of this, but there's been a plethora of other research coming out since then, you know, understanding that the pre, pro, and postbiotic environment of your microbiome and how it actually is affected by the things you eat and how important fermented foods and just ingesting those types of good microbes can be for you. And so I think what we did was pivot from a singular brand to this idea of, okay, what else can we offer people that has this idea behind it? And so Live Soda was doing exactly that. It was a, you know, soda inspired technically a kombucha, but no one really knew it as that. They kind of knew it as their healthier soda option. So it's lower in sugar and it has all these great gut brain microbes in it. And so we thought about, you know, playing in that soda space with Better Booch, but it just didn't feel like it was the same ethos. And so Better Booch has been this really tea focused company for a long time. And the soda fit seemed like live soda was already doing that really well. Hmm. And we wanted to play in the space. A lot of our consumers obviously love that flavor profile with the soda and root beer. And we even have spicy cherry berry, which, you know, you can kind of maybe guess what that one tastes like. But there's a whole nother world to kind of play in with that acquisition that we're really excited about.
Do you guys know is it Greed family? Is that how you say
Greedy?
Their last name? Greedy family. Mm-hmm. That's a cool
ass. Isn't that funny?
Yeah. Emma and Jen's Greedy. Do you know them or who they are?
I don't know them, but I'm obsessed already.
They're the power couple that's behind a bunch of the Kardashian brands. So Emma is the CEO of Good American, which is like Khloe Kardashian's jean brand. And then she's also the chief product officer for Skims. And then Jen's is the CEO of Skims. And they've sort of have like launched these brands together. And essentially whenever the like Kardashians want to like launch something up new again, they're like, oh yeah, like Skims is now valued at like $4 billion. Let's launch another one. Like they've got all these like new ideas and they're running a lot of these businesses. And I think that they're an interesting power couple. Like, I don't think we see a lot of like, oh, that's the couple that does this. Like, I don't think I can think of a lot of examples, but you guys are really kind of like trailblazing an example here. And you didn't necessarily go into this going like, oh, we're going to be like business partners. Is that right? Did you think that?
Oh, yeah. That's definitely right.
It just kind of happened. So if people are thinking about, because I think a lot of our listeners are thinking about launching businesses or they already have businesses, and maybe they're not thinking about their romantic partner as a potential like co-founder in that. But if they are, they want to consider that. Like, what advice do you have for folks who are like, maybe we could work together on something and they're approaching this conversation?
Well, I would say that you definitely want a partner that adds value that you don't have, right? That brings something to the table that's not redundant to your own skill set. Like brings something
complementary skill.
Definitely something complementary. I mean, I think that's first and foremost. Certainly somebody that you think will be in it for the long haul. It's always hard to tell, but of course, when you're dating someone, you hope that's the case.
Would you marry that person?
Yeah, exactly.
If not, do not start a business with them.
Ooh. Yeah, it's certainly like a marriage, no matter, I guess, whatever the dynamic is, because you're really getting involved and hopefully for a long time, and you want to be aligned but different enough that you're complementing each other. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You also probably have to be good communicators in your existing relationship for that to transfer then over to do where, like, if you do not communicate well with your partner, maybe not, because adding extra communication complexities. Would you guys say that you're good communicators?
I would say that we have learned to be better communicators since starting a business together. I think we thought we were good communicators when we founded this business. And then we learned that we were not, you know, in every situation, because we got every type of situation thrown at us. And then we've really learned through working on that, just how to communicate to one another effectively. And
do you communicate with each other?
I was going to ask how can you sense that an improvement has happened? Like, it sounds like you can see that, oh, back then we weren't really very good at this. But now, so I'm just curious, like, what your communication, like, KPI is in the relationship that tells you that this is, like, an improvement.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so to clarify, I would say we started out great communicators, right? And then things got stressful.
Yeah.
And then we realized we were not great communicators.
Great communicators in peacetime, but maybe not wartime.
Right.
Right.
Yes, exactly. And so learning how to manage our own stress, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
And again, like owning our own side of the street within that type of environment, was really effective in helping our communication towards one another, because then we're not like blaming each other for the stress that we're having.
Yeah.
We're taking ownership over it. And then, you know, I think like you can note the improvement when you realize that, you are coming at an issue from the same side of the issue. So it's like us against the issue versus like the issue being between us and like,
yeah,
sort of us seeing the other one as the issue. You know what I'm saying?
My partner is really good at reminding me this, and he'll be like, I just want to remind you, we're on the same team.
Mm-hmm.
Like what it feels like for a minute, we're not like, no, actually we're on the same team. And that like instantly like gets me back into like, okay, yeah, you're right. Like that's a good mm-hmm. little like mechanism he uses to like reel it back. Cause sometimes it feels yeah. like, oh no, like in stress mode and like in wartime when like things are not going well in business, it just gets easy for that to feel messy.
And that's good advice, mm-hmm. whether you're married to your partner or not. I mean, being reminded that you're on the same team. We'll be right back to the conversation after a quick break. Okay, back to the show. So, okay, I want to talk about the acquisition. You recently acquired Live Beverages. Yes. And this is another brand that specialized in kombucha. You kind of alluded to this a little bit, but I would love to hear more about that experience. I assume it was the first acquisition that you've made. Is that fair to say?
It was.
Okay.
Yeah, certainly not the one we've considered, but definitely the one we actually moved on. And I would say it was an amazing experience all around. As you know, Katie, as you know, we definitely looked at businesses from the investor side of things,
yeah.
You know, at Better Booch and outside of Better Booch. And I felt like this was one of the first times we were able to apply that knowledge in real time and real practice.
Wow.
So it was everything from, you know, thinking about Richard Branson's philosophy of just mitigating all downside as much as humanly possible. You know, how do you just like start with that? How do you just, you know, risk mitigate? And then the Buffett, you know, valuation side of things, you know, how can we get this price that we actually really want? And so, you know, one of the first times that it made sense for us where this business had been owned by a family office for many years that had treated it really well. I mean, there was no debt on the books and they basically just bought it and sat on it for a few years and they weren't really that interested in actually operating it. So it was a really good fit in that regard. You know, it was one of those things where there was a lot of synergies or potential synergies because we do manufacture ourselves. Mm. They were also manufacturing themselves, but not, I think, as sophisticated of a level as we're doing it. So it felt like, okay, if we just brought that in-house to what we're doing, you know, we'd see a lot of amazing efficiencies from that. So, you know, as we went kind of down the checklist, it really just made all the sense in the world. And it got us excited about building out more and more of a family of brands that we can kind of foster over time. So yeah, I would say that it's probably something we're interested in doing again and probably something that we're open to having a small book of brands that are maybe providing the customer something different than each yeah. other and but kind of work together synergistically as well.
I'm curious mm-hmm. if you guys are willing to share how you structured that kind of deal. So what you're willing to share about that, because I have a company called Grocery. So it's like a holding company that acquires other businesses. And primarily we acquire digital businesses that help small business owners, like the types of people who are customers of my main business. And so there's kind of mm-hmm. like an ecosystem. And I sort of hear you talking about that kind of strategy kind of coming into play. And so I'm curious, A, like, is that the strategy that you're thinking of? Like, you have one business already. You have other businesses you acquire that sort of help each other. There's kind of an ecosystem there. And also, if you can say a little bit about how you structured the deal, that'd be useful.
Yeah, I think that's right on. I think you definitely want to find opportunities that are very, you know, I think open or amenable to more synergies. The brands and companies work better off each other than independently. So, you know, we structured it through a stock acquisition. So it was basically acquiring the brand assets of the company through using stock and Better Booch. And so that was the exchange.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's an interesting one because I don't think a lot of people know that you can do that kind of thing. You have to buy the stock of the entire business, but you know, we left the liabilities behind. We took on the things that like the IP and the recipes and the logos and all the brand assets is what we essentially ultimately acquired. And that was a cool way to do it also because it brought the family office, you know, onto our cap table. They became partners. So there was definitely that moment of getting it back on the same side of the table, you know, as we closed the deal.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, that was that's an interesting dynamic in and of itself, you know, to go from kind of the negotiation table to flipping it. But Yeah, I would say that that was one of many ways you could structure it. But for us, that was the way that made the most sense.
Did you do everything up front, or were there sort of like payment periods over time? Like, I know I've structured deals where like it's not everything that I'm paying all up front. It's amount over time. You're saying you paid for their stock, or you're saying that like you gave them stock as the payment?
Yeah, we gave them stock in Better Booch in exchange for the brand assets.
Great.
Of the company.
And so do you create some sort of like vesting schedule over time, or does everything happen at once? They get all the stock at once.
You certainly can. I think for us, it was definitely an evolution of the deal as we went through it. I mean, at one point their lease came up where they were operating. They weren't interested in renewing it. We hadn't closed yet, and they were having equipment issues. So we actually did a side production agreement where we took on the manufacturing of the brand in the interim till we closed the deal. So, you know, along with that, there came a lot of stipulations around, you know, what if the deal falls through, you know, and there was certainly like, okay, well then you would owe us this, or we would owe you this, or et cetera, et cetera. So there was definitely kind of those dynamics, I think, as we went through the close. But that opportunity also was a blessing because it presented an opportunity, I think, to get ultimately a lower price point than we initially offered because we were coming in and already adding a lot of value.
So less stock then.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, because of that felt like the right kind of deal to come down to in the close. And, you know, after we closed, that was kind of it.
So is it correct that you're saying that you didn't need to have a bunch of cash up front then to do this?
Correct.
Because a lot of people think
attorney's fees and things like that. But and there was the working capital of getting the brand kind of up and running in-house on our side. But no, it wasn't like, you know, investing off a huge balance sheet and needing to eat up a lot of cash.
That's really important, I think, for people to hear, because I think most people, if they think, oh, we're going to operate as a power couple and we're going to like buy a business, but we have to have millions of dollars just laying around like ready to buy a business. And you guys have been really smart about strategically doing this, so you don't have to then dump a bunch of, I mean, there were some costs, of course, of like the things you mentioned, but you didn't have to have a ton of money just to do the acquisition. That's super smart.
And Trey, you are a finance guy, right? I'm curious, even just practically speaking, this type of deal is new to me. How did you even learn that this was something that was an option on the table?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I've certainly studied the Buffett strategy, where he's one of the more creative investors out there who's always coming up with ways to have little downside, lots of upside. So when you approach it that way, you know, obviously downside typically comes from the liabilities on the business and the debt potentially on the business. So thinking about, okay, how can we avoid that? You know, and an asset sale is one of the first, you know, I think best options for that. But I would say that there's so many other ways to do it, to your point, Tara, about like long-term winning together also that maybe folks don't think enough about, where it doesn't also even have to be the one-time, one-and-done deal we sign and close. It's, you know, you can get paid out through the cash flows over time once the entities come together, and you can win together over time and get paid out that way. And I think that's an important thing we were considering at one point as well. But for this type of deal, it just felt like the asset sale made the most sense. And I would say to your question, Katie, this is like probably straight from my business attorney is probably who brought it up.
Yeah.
I think I learned a lot from her.
You really get a good lawyer.
Probably anyone else. You know, she's probably the smartest one in the room. She's got a law degree and an MBA. So she advises us a lot on this kind of stuff.
Okay. I think that like makes or breaks my experience of someone's ability to do these sorts of deals. Like, I think myself, my friends that I have who've done successful deals like this, like for me, it was my business manager who pretty much was like, hey, you go find things that you're interested in and I'll make the deal structure that works.
Like someone who specializes in creative deals. Yes.
Creative deal making and thinking, which is very different than maybe hard like your traditional accountant or your traditional finance person who's a rule follower. They like a good, clear rule. But like you want to follow rules, but you want to be creative about how you follow rules. And like the way you guys structured this, I think to most people, that's a really like, oh, I didn't even know you could do that. You
can
only buy the assets of. So first of all, that's like a whole playbook here, right? You start a company first that has value that people are interested in being part of, such that you can then say, hey, I want to acquire your business and I'm going to give you stock in this cool thing that we've built that has value. And I'm not going to buy the company itself. I'm going to buy the assets in the company, which I think from like a tax perspective is probably better for you guys too, just like taking on assets of the company versus the actual whole shell of the company.
And is that a fair representation? That it was the assets of the company rather than the shell of the company.
Yeah, okay. Asset sales specifically. Yes. Like there's a whole play here that you guys ran that's pretty darn good. And that, like, I think most people don't know. This is why I love like Monopoly real life of the business, right? Like, you guys are playing Monopoly over there in your own way. And you're doing it like as a power couple together, which is like,
Tara's goals.
I'm geeking. I'm riled up now.
In case, look at that.
I love a deal.
Popping
I love
out.
A deal.
She's so excited.
So they broke down the deal, and you know how I feel about a good deal structure. I love it. And yeah. Like, you guys are so cute together. So like, I'm about to call Mert. Like, let's go do a deal. Let's go find.
I can
deal
tell by the way she's asking these. I'm like, these follow up questions were not planned. She is in it to win it today. She's asking for it beyond this podcast.
Yeah.
But actually, I have a follow-up question for you, is that with the and Trey, I apologize. I think I just interrupted you. I'm curious too, Ashley, as you think about the marketing and the branding and kind of the vision, you know, operating and thinking about kind of the creative integrity of one brand is very different than having to do that for a family of brands. So I'm also curious how you're thinking about the creative vision for this new edition. And like, are you like, I'm going to let that ride for a little bit, or I'm like, I'm going to try to start getting in there and, you know, changing things up to kind of fit this vision that I already have. Like, just tell me more about that.
Yeah. So this is something we've talked about and thought about a lot, which is, what is the mission of all of these brands together?
Yeah.
It really turned from being like one company with its own sort of goals and mission to being like the mission of the overall mission of the holding company or the new, you know, family of brands that we're building. And how can we apply that mission in a unique way to each of these brands individually? So, the mission is improving people's lives and improving people's guts through really tasty beverages and delicious consumables, irresistible consumables, you could say.
Yeah.
We're really excited about live and the potential there to reach a larger audience, because I think, just the fact that it's nostalgic soda flavors, you know, it already had that brand in it. On its own has wonderful velocities and like really great sales potential. And so we closed the deal. We've been thinking about this deal since April. I think we signed an LOI on it. And we closed at the end of November. And so since we've officially closed, we've engaged a new a branding agency, and we're about to kick off a rebrand for Live.
Cool.
To make it feel more cohesive to what the mission is and to what sort of like we're doing with Better Booch and our other brands, Chaw, Sparkling Tea.
I would say too, we have two young boys. I mean, Ash and I grew up drinking soda, and we're much more mindful, of course, of what our boys are drinking. And so to have the idea of like building out a soda company that is something they'll want to drink and be proud of, and we feel good about them drinking, and just seeing the future of soda and it going that direction, I think gets us really excited about that brand and what that, you know, where that one lives.
So for folks who are listening to or watching this episode, I'd love for them to like join in on the conversation with us. So on YouTube, we can see the comments. So that would be a good place to put this. We would love to hear, if you're listening, would you ever work with a current or future potential partner? And why? We'd love to hear and kind of like have a conversation about it in the chat. And also, Trey and Ashley, would you guys be willing to play a game with us? An entrepreneurship game?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Have you ever heard of, I feel so silly. Have you ever heard of the game F, Marry, Kill?
Oh, sure.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, we play an entrepreneurship version of this game called Invest, Compete, Acquire. Okay. So basically the concept is, would you invest your money in this company's future? Would you acquire them? Or would you say, I like what you're doing, but I think I can do it better. So I'm actually going to compete with you.
Okay. I love it.
All right, great. We're all going to play.
Okay.
So your choices are Athletic Greens, which I'm sure you're familiar, but for the audience, Athletic Greens, health and wellness company. If you listen to podcasts, you know about Athletic Greens because they are all up in that podcast advertising world. They sell basically a green powder. It contains 75 vitamins and minerals. You stir it into your water. You drink it. It improves your health. Tim Ferriss loves it, famously. Established in 2010, valued at $1.2 billion, and they've been growing really fast.
Okay.
Then there's Poppy, your other option, Poppy, the modern soda. Fruit juice, prebiotic apple cider vinegar, low sugar drink, kind of some of the things that we've been talking about today. They have been a really big hit on TikTok, so they have a lot of momentum with the youths, Gen Z. That's what that means to me. and in 2023, they passed $100 million in sales. And your final choice is Athletic Brewing, a non-alcoholic beer company. I drink like three of these a day because I don't drink alcohol. So they were listed as one of Time's most influential companies in 2022. They sold more than 100,000 barrels. I think 1,000 of those went to my house. And as of March 2023, they were valued at $500 million. And they have a goal of becoming a billion-dollar business. So Athletic Greens, Poppy, Athletic Brewing. Tara, you go first. Invest, compete, acquire.
Okay, this is hard. I think, and the reason it's hard for me, by the way, is like I particularly love digital businesses. And so like all these businesses that make a thing, I'm like, how does that even work? I don't know how to make a physical thing. Okay, so I'm going to go with, my first answer is invest on Athletic Greens.
Okay.
I like making something that is like a powdered format. I feel like it's like easy to move around and transport versus like liquid, which like is hard. So I'm going to go with that one for my invest strategy, but I also have like very limited information on just like physical products. I want to hear Trey and Ashley's answer because you guys like make a physical thing. So like how would you give your answers here?
Yeah, it's hard to make a physical thing. I would love to know more about digital businesses myself.
We'll talk after this. Yeah.
Yeah. I personally would acquire, would we do invest first? Invest,
whatever order
acquire.
You okay, want to so, go in.
Okay. So I'm going to invest in Athletic Brewing.
Okay. Why?
Yeah. We have met the founder. He's great. Trey has actually toured their manufacturing facility.
Give them my love.
In Connecticut. So we have the inside scoop on this one. I would invest in it.
That's good because like Poppy, you want to invest in a company that you where you know the founder, you trust the founder. You're like, okay, that's good leadership. So okay, I like that thinking on that. Okay,
Definitely compete with Poppy.
Yeah,
because I think we're already doing it better. No, no shots fired. Shots fired.
She said fighting words. We're already doing it better.
That's okay. You I like that. Say it with your
I
chest.
Like that confidence. That's a woman that hangs out with Rihanna.
Rihanna confidence.
Says, we're already doing it better.
Yep. Let me show you what I'm working on next.
I know you want to talk to me.
I absolutely respect the brand that they've built, but I personally believe that what we're doing is way more effective than what they're doing. So I would have to acquire AG1 because I think that's just an incredible brand. They've done an amazing job. And, you know, once I have how many billion dollars in stock, I'll offer 1. Them.
1.2.
Hey, I'm actually curious too, because I also know very little about consumables. Is Tara's like theory here that packaging and distributing and selling like a powder versus a liquid? I mean, that sounds to me instinctual. I'm like, yeah, like that makes sense. Would you all agree with that? Is that
definitely
a good pack?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, it's shelf stable. You don't have to use ice packs. You know, it's a much lighter package to ship than a 12 pack of kombucha, as it were. so yeah, I definitely am aligned with that.
So we're going to wrap this up momentarily, but I'd love to hear from you guys if there's any last like pieces of advice you have for folks who are thinking about power coupling up and working on something together, whether that's with a romantic partner or not, just like a general partner, and just sort of like going out there and conquering. Like any advice that you have parting words.
And I'd add, I want to know, Trey, if you agree with Ashley's assessment of y'all's invest, compete, acquire answer.
Oh,
because
okay,
y'all are in this together.
Do that
first. We were just kind of chatting. We were like, should we be aligned on this? Should we be different? I mean, because I had a slightly reversed. I would acquire Athletic Brewing, especially I think that one's going to the moon. So if I can pick it up today for even $500 million, I would do that. AG1, I would invest. I don't know as much about the powdered game and where like the longevity of that and how the effectiveness of it even. So I know that they're doing really well and I love the brand. So I would want to kind of be along for the ride as an investor. And then to Ashley's point, we're very much aligned on the poppy thing. Live soda, especially is something, it was sort of the original, soda. And we think that's going to surprise a lot of people this year. So we'll see.
Okay, so what do we do if you guys are not 100% aligned on answers?
It's a board meeting. Convinced. They have to arm wrestle.
I mean, yeah, we can. I'm down with acquiring Athletic. I think it's a great company. I was going to invest in it anyway, so
yeah,
I could acquire it.
We also stopped drinking alcohol like you, Katie, so I think
really?
That's
even a... Yeah, and you know what? Yeah. I know that we want advice for parting words. I'm also just personally curious how much kombucha y'all are drinking in that house. Because it sounds like you're really all about this microbiome. And I'm like, I'm so curious. Are you guys like pack a day people, or how does this work in your own home?
I mean, I don't know that I can drink any beverage besides water as a pack of a day, but too many bubbles. But I definitely have at least one a day, if not two, by way of like tasting other batches and things like that. So I usually have one that I pick and I drink out of the can, and probably around one more. Just doing random tastings at the office.
Okay, love it.
I'm the same way, and we actually we developed Cha sparkling iced tea to be sort of the thing that we crush, you know, five of, because it's a little bit lighter in body. But yeah, I think having one or two kombuchas a day is all you need.
Yeah, beautiful. And with kombucha and anything that's fermented, it's really more about consistency than like dosage per se.
I didn't know that.
Because there is a like maximum effective dose. And so beyond that, your body will just flush out whatever it is. That's with supplements or really anything that you eat or drink. So yeah, it's more about consistency, just continuously introducing those good microbes to your gut.
Oh my God.
Well, one of the things I want to point out that I've learned personally the most from in this conversation is watching how you guys work as a team, even in the conversation. So like when we were talking about like the acquisition deal and like the mechanics of the acquisition deal, like one person stepped up, and when we were talking about other things and more creative design, the other person, and it was kind of natural how you guys did that. And also I loved how as we're playing this game, I got to watch how like, you kind of dealt with like, okay, well, we don't agree on this one. And like, I actually even saw there was a moment as we were setting up the game where I think it might have been like, Trey, you like hit the mute button really quickly and you guys had like a quick sidebar conversation.
I didn't even notice that.
Like,
that's
they're
so
in
funny.
Sync, they're aligned, they're interested in being a team. They have
you know what? Tara's partner is about to get a phone call after this recording and she's geeked
He's
out
gonna,
right
well,
now.
He'll
she's
already,
ready.
He'll already be watching. And I think like for us, like all content is entrepreneurship content. And merch might also, if we're watching like a video about the jungle, he's like, go ahead, pause it. Let me tell you what the lion's doing right now and how this is all really about entrepreneurship. So we view like there's an entrepreneurship lesson in everything. I'm watching you guys have this conversation. And for me, there's like a power couple working in teams lesson just in the if you're not watching this, I actually recommend you watch this episode
because there's dynamic.
Verbal
it's
there's nonverbal
cool.
dynamic too and how you guys work together, which is really beautiful. You've built that. I can see that you've built
thank
that.
You.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Anything nice you'd to like hear. To add?
Well, I mean, not necessarily on that point, but we can certainly share some closing remarks on, you know, advice for those getting started.
Yeah.
I would say that beginning with the end in mind is probably the most important thing you can do. And it's not necessarily what we did. In fact, we probably did the opposite. You know, we kind of stumbled our way into this business and bootstrapped it for many years and had it. It was kind of a family business for a while. And then we ended up raising capital and going that direction. And there's just different ways to approach it. And some would call it the speedboat versus the sailboat approach, if you will. So, you know, going slow or going fast, you know, are you trying to get market share right away? Are you building slowly over time? I mean, those kind of those are really important, I think, to establish, because it can change the whole dynamic of the business, whether you're taking on investment or not, and what that looks like. And just knowing that earlier than later in the business, I think, saves you a lot of heartache. For example, just on the bootstrapping side, you know, we went from 1 gallon jars to 5 gallon to 10, you know, we really like staircase stepped up. You know, had we raised money sooner, maybe we would have just gone full in on larger tanks and grown into ourselves that way. And, you know, saved a lot of time. There's things where it could apply to almost anything, but that would be my advice.
Yeah. And mine, especially early on, would be, immerse yourself in whatever the industry is, and introduce yourself to the other players, you know, peers that are at the same level as you, and people who you admire who might be a couple years ahead. Try and make those relationships and make those connections, because you will learn a ton, and you will also find synergies. I mean, one thing we didn't talk about that was really integral for our early days was, finding synergies with other brands that we, and other founders that we met. Like, if we were using the same bottle, we would buy in larger quantities to get a price break on them, or we would share space in like our new commercial kitchen that we just built out. And, we would share contacts and relationships. You know, someone would have a meeting at Whole Foods and they'd be like, let me slip you the email of the buyer, you know?
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff just goes so far. And I would say, don't be afraid of being liberal with your contacts and like being open with your sort of edge, you know, because no one has what you have personally. And so that means that it can't be duplicated by somebody else. So it's better to just share. And then if everyone kind of comes to the table with that sort of open door mentality, you both can, all ships will rise.
Yeah.
As they say.
Beautiful.
What a stunning place to end. Like, truly.
Yeah.
So okay, let's Trey, leave it there, Ashley, then. Thank you so much for joining us. I've not seen Tara that animated ever filming. So I really enjoyed that. I know she did too. So thank you for sharing all your wisdom. I learned a ton today.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having us, guys. We really, really enjoyed it. And again, would love to be there physically on the couch with you next time, but this was really fun to do, and really appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right, that is all for this week's episode of Bossy. Thanks for tuning in, and remember to leave your comments in the YouTube video so that we can see.
Yeah, give us your answers to the game invest, compete, or acquire, and then also tell us if you would work with your current or future partner and why.
Yes, and maybe go out and drink a kombucha today. I feel like that's what I'm going to go do after this.
Okay, kombucha break.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.